Athletics Podcast, where we bring you the pulse of the Panthers' athletic scenes.
And I'm your host, Jeremy Schneider. Thanks for tuning in. It's been a busy few weeks, and I've decided to take a small step back from the podcast. Starting after the holidays, the IMA podcast will be released every 2 weeks. It'll give me an opportunity to still deliver the in-depth interviews with the important folks around Maumee, but I'll be able to focus on what's really important in my life, being a husband and a dad. I'm excited to close out our first calendar year with two awesome interviews. Our guest this week is Scott Perotti. Scott's in his third year as the principal at Maumee High School, and before that, he was the assistant principal for 9 years. He came to Maumee all the way back in 2006. Before that, though, he spent time teaching social studies to high schoolers in North Carolina. He has his bachelor's degree from Penn State, something we talk about at the end of the episode, and his master's from Norwich University. Scott's been a very visible and active part of the Maumee schools community. You can find him on the regular at a sporting event, concert, play, or some other activity after school hours. He's done a great job at Maumee, and I'm excited to have him on as my guest this week. Here's my conversation with Scott Perotti. So I've been in multiple districts as a parent with my kids, so I've seen the way different things run, even in different states, different parts of Ohio. You, as an educator and an administrator, have done the same from that end, and as a parent. What do you think makes Maumee different? What makes Maumee, I guess, that special part about Maumee?
Yeah, the thing that makes Maumee different, in my perspective, is that the size of the district, the size of the community, compared to the other communities and districts that neighbor us, because basically we're much smaller than most of them, which
yeah.
I know when you say that, people automatically think that's bad, but the reason why I bring that up is because we are so small, but we also offer almost the exact same number of opportunities for kids. And I think when you think about the number of kids in the district or the number of kids in the high school, and you compare the number of opportunities that exist, our students have way more opportunities than a kid, let's say, across the river has,
right,
or up in Sylvania. So that allows us, we kind of joke about it amongst the district administrative team, we refer to the district as a boutique district because we are so small.
Oh.
We know the families, we know the parents, we know the kids,
yeah,
and we have all of these opportunities that we offer to the students. So it's a really unique kind of combination of factors and variables that go into it. But that's, as far as I can see, that's what makes us different than all the others.
And I see that because Evelyn was involved in, you know, a bunch of sports,
mm-hmm,
marching band. Symphonic. I mean, I could go on and on with everything that kid was involved in.
Yeah.
And, you know, we take it in the athletic world as having a multi-sport athlete is very important for the athletics.
Mm-hmm.
But flip side of that, having kids involved, not just athletics, but multiple activities, that's,
yeah,
important for the student as well, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. So the other thing that I think contributes to that moniker of being a boutique district is, specifically at the high school, when you look at our performing arts, you know, obviously we have our drama club where,
mm-hmm,
we put on our fall play and our spring musical, but we have a band program, we have an orchestra program, and we have a choir program, and all three currently are thriving.
Yeah.
They're growing. Year over year, we see steady growth, and very few high schools have all three of those programs. And then when you add to that our fine arts programming that we offer during the school day, we have at the high school at least three very dynamic art teachers who, they know their basics, but they are very willing to kind of expand beyond,
yeah,
those things. And we've been able to offer some unique coursework for our students, and we've been able to really kind of just expand upon that. So when you take everything in totality, whether you're talking about sports whether you're talking about performing arts, whether you're talking about fine arts, and then you add in all the activities.
Yeah.
There is no shortage of opportunities for our students to get involved and stay engaged with doing things with our staff members.
Yeah.
And to me, that when you do that, that's when you start to see good, healthy relationships form, not just between kids, but between kids and staff members. And so those are the kinds of things that make us unique. And again, those relationships begin to expand beyond just the building. They expand into the community, whether it's parents and families, businesses, and other community partners. All of it contributes to that uniqueness.
How important is it to make sure that the kids are involved? I mean, it's kind of like the old saying, idle time is the devil's playground, right?
Yeah.
But it's more than that. It's yeah. about exposing them to all these different things, because you never know what these kids are going to do until they actually do something. So how important is it to make sure that the kids are involved? I know Cam has, Cam Kutcher, the athletic director, has a certain percentage that he wants to see, you know, the percentage of student population involved in athletics. And I'm sure that's true across the board. So how important is it to keep those kids involved for a variety of reasons?
Yeah, I think there is that fine line between having kids over-scheduled,
yeah.
over-engaged, and under-engaged. I don't know where that mark is, and I know Cam has a percentage that he likes to kind of just keep his eye on. But I think it's important, because there's so much that can be gained from engagement outside of the classroom beyond the regular school day. And that leads to new experiences for kids. It leads to, like I said earlier, growing relationships and developing stronger relationships among kids and among staff. So it is important, but there is that fine line of
sure.
where does it become too much?
Right.
You know?
And that's where you got to take it on an individual basis, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. 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 I think it comes down to what can the student handle, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, academically and extracurricularly. It also comes down to what do the parents want and what can they handle?
Right.
You have multiple children, right?
Yes.
So you and your wife are playing zone defense, as we like to say in the
yep.
parenting world.
Yeah.
You're outnumbered and you can't get to every single thing. So if you have good relationships with other parents and you can carpool, great. But again, I think every parent steps back and says, you know, they evaluate, what do we want to get involved in? How involved and how engaged do we want our kids to be? And I think that comes on an individual family basis, you know.
So to bring it back to kind of one of your original points, this being a smaller district and you know all the families, all the students specifically, that's where that comes into a really good advantage for you guys, because you can know mm-hmm. these students individually and know mm-hmm. maybe better than other places what they can handle and how to step in.
Yeah, and 100%. And I think the flip side of that coin is, because we're small, we expect and we need students to be involved in multiple things to fulfill those opportunities. So again, that's unique. There's other districts where I always use basketball as an example. You only can have 5 people on the court at one time, right?
Right.
And if you go to a high school that has 600 kids in it, you have to be five of the best out of 600. But if you go to a school that has 1,200 kids, your chances are cut in half.
Yeah.
And I think that's a perspective I look at things from, an administrative perspective, but also as a parent perspective. You know, you want your kid to have chances. You want your kid to have opportunities. And,
right.
And that's why I think this is such a great place.
Yeah, I think a lot of parents get hung up on, I call it the LeBronification of mm-hmm. youth sports, high school sports, where everybody has, and I think a lot of parents have this view of high school athletics as a means to getting them to play in college or getting them to, some parents out there think their kids are going to get a pro contract, and that's
right.
like a fraction of a percentage.
Right.
But this means so much more to the kids, even if they're never going to play. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Evelyn's not playing basketball in college right
yeah.
now. But the lessons she learned on that court and in those locker rooms and on that practice floor
mm-hmm.
carries her through to this day.
Yeah. So sports have played a huge role in my life as a high school student, college student, and then as an educator. And what I love about sports is that there's so many lessons to be learned. There's so many struggles to be experienced. And those experiences and those struggles grow people to be better than what they were before. And they teach them how to handle adversity. And that's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Life never gets easier.
No.
It just gets harder and harder as you get older. And I don't say that to scare people, but I say that because it's a reality.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to know how to deal with that adversity, react to that adversity, and overcome it. So, and sports teaches kids those things a lot.
The Mir newspaper has been a supporter of IMA from the very beginning. If quality journalism is important to you, please consider becoming a subscriber. You can head to their website at themirnewspaper.com to find more information on becoming a traditional print or digital subscriber.
Every time I hear Cam talk in one of those season parent meetings, or you know, whenever we get a chance to converse, culture is a big thing that comes up with Cam. So I want to take that kind of more on large, okay. The high school at large.
Okay.
You know, I feel like you, Corey Wagner, and Cam, and other building leadership, you know, Gretchen Brown, people mm-hmm. like that, have been able to establish such a great culture here in this high school. Can you talk about the importance of creating a culture in the high school and how that impacts students, their learning, their what they just get out of the school experience?
Yeah, so Maumee has always had a strong academic culture ever since I stepped foot in the building back in 2006. And I don't think that's any different now than it was. In fact, I would argue that our academic culture is a little bit stronger now than it was, you know, maybe 10 or 11 years ago.
Right.
I think the struggle that we always had in assessing what our culture looked like was, you know, we talk about teaching the whole child,
yeah.
right? And I would say our whole culture as a building and as a school community was not the greatest. Most people recognize that we were struggling in the athletics
sure.
side of things. And our former leadership and Matt Dick and Matt Schindler and even Dr. Kramer, they recognized that shortfall. And they were the ones that really kind of helped to get Maumee thinking about leaving the NLL, the Northern Lakes League, and finding a league that was more appropriate for us to be in. You know, we were the second smallest school, and it was a struggle to compete against these large schools.
Sure.
So going back to your question, you know, when you see kids have success in only one facet in the academic part of their life, but they're not having success in the athletics part of their life, that can create some problems. And so Matt and Todd made that move. They took it to the school board, and that decision was made for us to join the MBC. And it just so happened to coincide with me taking over the building. And so I have reaped the benefits of that decision as the principal or as a building leader, but there's more to it than just that. You know, bringing Corey along,
mm-hmm.
Plucking her from the classroom was a tough decision because she was a really, really good teacher. And plucking Cam from the middle school to take the athletic director and activities director positions was also a difficult thing. But we felt like we could work together to build a culture where we see kids flourish academically and we see kids flourish athletically and in their extracurriculars. And we talk a lot about climate, right? What is the temperature of the building right now? And if we can sustain a prolonged climate, then that's healthy and that's positive, then that becomes our culture.
Right.
And so it's been really interesting to just watch it evolve. I say that I watch it because I can't take responsibility for it. I wish I could, but it's what all of our people are doing, from our teachers to our coaches and to, you know, just everybody who's got their boots on the ground working with the kids, they're setting these tones, that the tone leads to that temperature, that climate in the building. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing kids experiencing positive success in multiple facets of their day in and day out experience.
Well, it's just a confidence thing, isn't it? I mean, if a kid can go out and succeed on the football field or the basketball court or whatever, or, you know, in the choir, mm-hmm. you know, they you know, you have choir competitions. If a kid can succeed in those, that confidence bleeds over into other aspects, doesn't it?
Exactly. And that's where I think we struggled so much with, you know, seeing it be so lopsided, right, with where they were seeing the success, it really feeds the other side of their life. And I think that's important. You know, you think about being an adult, if you're not experiencing success in maybe in your career, how can that lead to a lack of success in your, you know, being a good spouse and being a good parent and those things? And so it's important that kids have that, they experience that success in multiple facets.
When Cam, and I've told this story before, when Cam took over, or when it was announced he was taking over as athletic director, my first reaction was, oh no, mm-hmm. I didn't want him to leave the football coaching, because yeah. Jack, my now junior, soon to be senior, I really wanted Cam to be his coach.
Right.
But then I got to thinking about, well, Cam's still going to have that influence on him. And as much as I really appreciate Cam and admire him, he's now going to have that impact and influence on a wide variety. Same thing for Corey. Mm-hmm. Is there something that these people, and I might be getting a little deep here on us for, mm-hmm. for a Saturday afternoon, but is there something that people like Cam and Corey, and I mean, you came from the classroom too to become yeah. an assistant principal. Is there a common factor that people show that show they're ready for that, or that they can even do that? Because not everybody yeah. can do that.
Right, right. The two of them have something very, very much in common. And I've never told anybody this, but they are both very dynamic in having difficult conversations with people.
Okay.
They're able to confront things in a way that is compassionate, but also establishes like a level of accountability. Whenever I talk with people about accountability, people automatically assume like punishment, right?
Sure.
And I always try to tell people that accountability does not have to be punishment. Accountability is bringing attention to something.
Okay.
And that's the lowest level of accountability. And Cam and Corey are, I would say they're better than me at it, to be quite honest. They're so good at bringing attention to something with somebody in a way that helps them to reflect, helps them to maybe change course without being punitive, that I think helps people grow. And if you can help people grow, they're more likely to stick around. And if we can keep people in the places where they're at, that's good for our, again, our culture, our climate, and our kids.
Right.
And we talk. one of the things I told them when we first took over was the three C's. It was competence, chemistry, and character. Those are the three things that we look for when we work with our staff, when we have to hire people. We want to look for competency, character, and chemistry, right?
Yeah.
Those three things, because those are the three things that I think draw people to you.
Mm-hmm.
They make people want to be a part of something. And so Cam and Corey, they possess the three C's.
Right.
And I think they exude it, and they look for it in other people. And then when they see people not performing where maybe they think they could be, they bring attention to it. And it's an opportunity for growth.
How much of your job is made easier, or I guess how important is it as the building leader to have people like that? People from the, you know, Cam and Corey,
yeah.
classroom teachers, custodial staff, support staff, everything. Because I think a leader is only as strong as the people that surround them.
Yeah.
How important is that for you, and how much does that impact your job as the principal?
Yeah, it is huge. I mean, we just had a conversation the other day about something, and they didn't see eye to eye on it. And I was in the middle. I'm like, well, we're going to have to make a decision here. And the great thing is they don't just say yes. They give their opinion even when we don't agree.
Yeah.
So neither one of them shy away from that. They hold me accountable. Yeah. They, you know, when they think I'm not doing something that's in line with our principles, or they think I could be doing something or made a better decision, they're not afraid to tell me that. And so I think because they are able to hold me accountable as well, it first of all, it allows me to grow, but I think it helps us to make tough decisions that are best for kids, best for our people, and again, keeps that needle either in the position or moving even further when we measure what that climate looks like. So yeah, they are, like I said, I would argue I have the best team in Northwest Ohio. They're just great at what they do, and I'm blessed to work with them, to be quite honest, because they are so dynamic.
We're extremely lucky to have the Pride of the Panthers helping us make memories for our students. There aren't many communities or schools who have a group of talented photographers at almost all of our kids' events and games. You can follow them on Facebook by searching Pride of the Panthers. So when Scott Parati wakes up every morning, and I know you love your job. I love my job, but there's some mornings when you just don't want to do it. What is the thing that gets you out of bed, gets you in the shower, and gets you in the car to come here every morning? What is your motivation as a principal?
Yeah, I think it goes back to my experience in high school. I was a mediocre student who fell far below my potential.
Okay.
But I tell you that because I only missed 2 days of school between 7th grade and 12th grade.
Wow.
And I remember exactly why I missed school. I had a stomach bug one day, and I had my grandfather's funeral. Those were the only 2 days I missed. And I say all that because even though I was a mediocre student who fell far below my potential, I loved going to school because I had great teachers. The people that stood in front of me in classrooms were dynamic, they were friendly, they were funny, and I loved high school. I remember graduating being so sad that I was leaving, and I always thought, if as an educator, if I can make somebody feel that way about going to school, that would be awesome. So, yeah, I guess what gets me up out of bed every morning is just the, number one, setting a good example for my own children, but also making somebody's day better, you know, giving a kid a good reason to want to come to school. Whenever we have to have like attendance meetings with kids who fall short on their attendance, I always tell them there's few places you go in the world where they want you there.
Yeah.
This is one of them, right? And so we really, really want you here. And so that's always kind of been my motivation to get up and come to work every day is to make a kid's day better.
There's been, you know, so when you took over as principal, there's been, there was obviously people who are here and still here. You inherited them. But there's been a lot of new people. I mean, both in the classroom and athletically and you know, other leadership-wise. What do you look for in them? Is it that joy to be here and that desire to make a kid's day better? What is it that you're looking for out of them?
Yeah, so whenever we go into that hiring process, whether it's a coach or a teacher, I always think in the back of my mind as I'm listening to the person in the interview, is who's going to have the greatest ability to connect with kids.
Right.
I feel like as a principal or as an educational leader, if I'm worth anything, I should be able to coach a teacher up on how to be a better teacher.
Okay.
So obviously they need to know their content, but I feel like with me and Corey, we can work with people to make them better teachers. But if they can't connect with kids, then to me, that's like a no-go. You have to be able to be comfortable approaching teenagers that you don't know and make them feel welcome and make them feel comfortable and make them want to be in your classroom, whatever that takes. And if they can do that, then Corey and I can handle the rest. We can help them become a better teacher. And so that's what we always look for. Who, when I look at them, is this the person that can connect with kids the best?
Right.
That's what I look for.
So as a parent, I've got four kids. Mm-hmm. And I'll just talk about the two oldest ones, Jack and Evelyn, right now, because they're either graduated from high school or in high school. They're vastly different kids, vastly different students.
Yeah.
And that's difficult sometimes as a parent to kind of have a foot in both of those and understand that what worked for Evelyn isn't going to work for Jack and vice versa. So one thing I've been impressed with you and the building administration and the teachers is there seems to be that understanding from the teachers and you guys as well. How important is that to know that each one of these kids is an individual? And how hard is it sometimes to remember that what works for 90% of the kids isn't going to work for these couple kids over here, and you've got to tailor something for them?
Yeah. So I have a story from high school that I share with people all the time. When I was a junior in chemistry class, you know, I was a terrible, terrible chemistry student. And the teacher that I had my older sister. And my older sister worked really hard as a student. She had her academic challenges, but her hard work and her hard work ethic helped her overcome those. And he saw in me all this potential and a very low work ethic.
Right.
And he told me one time in the middle of class, he said, you know, you're nothing like your older sister, to which I replied, thank God, right? And that landed me in the principal's office. And my mom, needless to say, my parents were not happy with me.
Right.
So I tell that story because I was so offended that he was comparing me to my sister. And I remember when I became a teacher, I thought, I will never compare a kid to a sibling.
Yeah.
Because that made me, it enraged me to the point where I talked back and, you know, I always was trying to be respectful to adults. But I thought, if it made me feel that way, how would I make another kid feel? So as I'm getting older, I find myself calling siblings by the wrong names now a little bit more often than ever before. But comparing two siblings from the same family and how they traverse their academic career is vastly different. And I share that with the staff all the time. Like, here's how it made me feel. So, you know, be careful about doing that, because you can really, really ruin a relationship with a kid by comparing them to their sibling.
Is there a secret to doing this? Have you found anything, some big grand secret, or what's the?
So to know the kids, two things I do that I think I do well, and I'm not sure everybody in my role does, but I greet kids in the front door every morning.
Mm-hmm.
It helps me to learn their faces and their names, especially with the incoming freshmen. That's the first thing. And I like to be in the cafeteria, and I try to be in there as much as possible. So, again, I can have conversations with kids, get to know them, I ask them stupid questions, and I get stupid answers, and I love it. And then when I'm doing classroom observations, I will pull up rosters while I'm in there. So I'll have a list of who's in that room while I'm sitting in there. And I go through the rosters as I'm listening to the teacher teach, and I will look at their names and their faces to try to get to know that and kind of ingrain that in my memory. And so all those things that I try to do that are important to me, two things. They give me face time with kids, which is why I got into the profession. I think that was the number one reason why I had some trepidation about becoming an administrator was I liked working with kids. I didn't like working with adults. and so it gives me FaceTime with the kids. It helps me to learn their names. And I think when you call a kid by their name in the hallway, there's so much power in that that I don't think people realize that, you know.
Yeah.
When a kid's like, oh, the principal knows my name. Yeah, I know your name, and it's not because of anything you did. It's just because you are here and you are you. That's it. And I think that's powerful, and that is what has served me well as an educator, and that's what I try to model for my team and for my staff.
How cool is it when, again, whether it's athletically or when you go to the spring musical or you see him in a debate team setting, you see a kid in a classroom, and inevitably, you're going to see sometimes a different kid on that field or in that other setting.
Mm-hmm.
How cool is that to see a kid who maybe is one way in the classroom, but then you see him out on the football field and you're like, oh my gosh, that's that same kid? That's got to be really neat.
It is. It is. I mean, every kid is different and every kid has a gift. And what's funny is, like, you know, sometimes we want to be better at something. We want to be better in an area where we may not be gifted in. And I always try to remind kids, like, you know, if just because you may not be the best at this, you're pretty darn good at that.
Right.
And I think it's great. I love seeing kids be successful. I love seeing kids put time and effort into something. You know, we live in a fast food culture, right?
Yeah. Like,
if I want to eat, I can get food within 5 minutes.
Yep.
If I want to find out a piece of information, I can pick up my phone and Google it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's I like seeing it even more now than I did when I first started teaching, is watching kids persevere through something, put in effort, struggle a little bit,
yeah,
and still come out successful. Is I love that. I like the concerts are my favorite. The watching the plays and the musicals, seeing teams get into the playoffs, right, mm-hmm. and go deep into the playoffs. Everybody gets a regular season, but not everybody gets to play those extra games. And so when they do get those extra opportunities, I love it. It's like, that's why we do what we do.
How has the internet, Google,
mm-hmm.
you know, you mentioned it, that mm-hmm. information right at your fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
How has that changed being an educator? Because when I was going through school, you didn't have that. Like I graduated and computers were just starting to come into the school, not even classrooms, but the school itself.
Right.
Now these kids can pull, they've got calculators in their pockets for math and they can look up any facts. How has that changed things for you?
It has changed education drastically. You know, kids can consume content like crazy now.
Yeah.
And so before the internet age, teachers were like basically the holders of the knowledge, and their job was to convey that knowledge to the students. Now it's not the case anymore, because the students can find that information, right? It's at their fingertips. So the teacher's job and my job now is become, how do we teach kids to take that information and to analyze it and apply it?
Oh.
And so, you know, I was a former history teacher,
yep.
right? And I always would tell kids, when I first started teaching, a lot of it was like rote memorization.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I reached the end of my classroom, my role,
yeah.
I would always talk to kids about, it's not so much knowing when a specific thing happened or why a specific thing happened. It's knowing in what context it happened, what else was going on around it at the time, and why did it play out the way that it did. You know, when you talk about RELA classes, I was just in a couple of classes over the week, and they're working on their persuasive essays, talking about rhetorical analysis and like, how do you convince people,
right.
And you know, what ways can you play to their ideologies and things like that, with ethos, pathos, and logos, right? And so that's an application skill. You know, how do you persuade somebody to see something from your perspective? We have an innovations class where we have teachers who are basically working with kids to design their own projects so that they can learn more about something and then apply it some way. You know, we talk a lot about problem-based learning. You know, what's a problem out there that exists? It could be a big problem or a small problem. And how do you take what you know in this course to apply to solving that problem? So it's changed education drastically. And artificial intelligence is only going to make that way more difficult.
Yeah.
That's the newest thing that we're trying to wrap our heads around and try to come up with a solution of, how do we incorporate it without it becoming a crutch for kids? Because AI can produce content that is very difficult to determine whether it's human-made or artificially generated.
Right.
So that's the new struggle that we've embarked on.
yeah. So you've got to kind of stay. I mean, I'm sure in the past, you know, back when you and I were going through school, 80s, 90s, early 2000s,
yeah.
you know, I'm sure there was a drive to stay current.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nothing like it is now. Like, you guys have to be, like, right on the cutting edge, ahead of the curve.
Yeah, that cycle of, like, staying current, I think, used to be maybe, you know, if you go back to the 80s or before the 80s, maybe, like, 20 to 15-year cycle. I think when I was teaching, it was more like a 15 or 10-year cycle. Now I would say it's, like, 3 to 5.
Yeah.
Like, things are changing so quick, it's hard to kind of stay ahead of things and to stay up to date on things. It's a challenge, and the teachers they talk about it quite a bit, and we try to manage that as a staff, and how can we help each other, and how can, you know, if you find something that helps you to manage that better, we try to share it out.
Rapid fire questions. I ask you a question, and you just give me the first thing that pops to your mind. What is a book that you've read, either as a student or as an adult? What's that? What's a book that has really made an impact on you?
I believe the title of it is "What School Could Be." It's by Ted Dintersmith.
Okay.
It's just really. It's about that. It's about the departure from teaching, like a specific. How do I say this? Instead of teaching to tests, like state tests, or teaching to the curriculum that leads to the state tests, it's more focused on problem-based learning where, again, going back to the application piece.
And, yeah.
I read it about 5 or 6 years ago, and it completely changed my perspective on teaching.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. One vacation spot that you could go to. Where is Hawaii, Alaska? Where are you going if you could have one dream vacation?
I've always wanted to go to Costa Rica.
Okay.
I've never been there. My wife went there for a very brief study abroad when she was in college, and her descriptions of it, I want to go see it.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. You mentioned that you were a history teacher, mm-hmm. and I feel like guys always have that one period mm-hmm. that they go to.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's based around the wars. So yeah, we got Revolutionary War guys, Civil War guys, World War II guys, mm-hmm. Roman Empire guys mm-hmm. type stuff. What are you? Which one of those are you?
Well, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but my master's degree is in military history.
Okay.
So, I'm fascinated by studying the wars, but more fascinating, I always found, was the social impact of war
yes.
on societies.
Yes.
I guess when it comes to, if I had to pick a war that I was most interested in, it's hard to choose between the Revolutionary and the Civil War. It'd be one of those two. I'm fascinated by what people did for a cause that they believed was greater than themselves.
Yeah.
And I like to think that if I had lived during one of those times, I would have been a great example. But I tell you what, it's amazing when I read stories about it. I hope I would be, but I don't know if I would have been.
I'm glad you brought that up because it's not, you know, because I'm a Revolutionary War guy here.
Yeah.
I love that era. But it's not even about the like battles or anything. It's about the characters and the people around it. It's
right.
about the Alexander Hamiltons mm-hmm. and the George Washingtons, mm-hmm. Thomas Jeffersons, people like that. I think it's what you can learn from the people around it, not necessarily like the exact movement of troops and stuff like that.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. It's almost, I guess it's a righteousness that you see in these people that they stood up for something that they felt was super important and were willing to die for something, which is, I think, a concept that is hard in this day and age to kind of wrap your head around.
It absolutely is. It is. All right. Based upon your hat and knowing your history, I know the answer to this. College football playoff is coming up. And I will say this. So I was on, unfortunately, that horrible app called Twitter. But there was a guy who played the college football playoffs on EA 2025 or whatever, one of the video games. And the team you're about to mention, he had coming out on top and winning the national championship.
Okay.
Who do you have in the college football playoffs?
You know, obviously, as an alum, I would love to see the Penn State Nittany Lions at least make it to the championship game. I don't know if I can sit here and look you in the eye and tell you that I really think they'll get there.
Okay.
I think Penn State's got the easiest road.
They do. They really do.
And I'm not sure why the college football gods have finally now decided in this season to favor Penn State. But it's tough. I think Georgia is good. Probably they might be the best team. I don't know. I really don't know. I haven't even looked at the whole bracket, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I don't know which side everybody's on. I think Georgia's really good. I think Texas is really good. I don't know if they're on the same side or not.
I think they are. That would be like a second round, maybe semifinal matchup.
Yeah. Oregon, obviously, is really good, too.
Yeah.
I think somebody might catch them off guard over the three rounds that it's going to take to get to the championship game. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it could be Georgia and Oregon. Or Texas and Oregon, but I would love to see the Nittany Lions playing in the championship.
There's one team that you didn't mention for some reason. I don't understand. There's one team that's glaring omission.
Yeah, and I will tell you this. So I have to root for Tennessee because my mother-in-law and father-in-law are Tennessee grads.
Okay, that's fair.
And so, and that is where my daughter wants to go.
It's beautiful down there.
It is. And so I will have to root for the Vols against Ohio State. But I, as a Big Ten guy, I would never wish a Big Ten team to lose to an SEC or an ACC team.
Except for this time.
This is the only time.
That's fair. That's fair. As a student, what's game day like in Happy Valley at Beaver Stadium? It's got to be incredible.
It was. It was great. You know, the stadium did not have sufficient lighting for nighttime games when I was there. So most of our games were like 12 o'clock starts.
Yeah.
Or maybe every once in a while we'd have a 4 o'clock start early in the season.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the amount of money that some alumni have and the the buses that they roll into. So usually people start showing up at the stadium sometime around Wednesday or Thursday with their campers and their RVs.
Oh,
everything.
My gosh.
And so it's intense, it's crazy, and it was so much fun. I used to love the weekends. It was great, and the alumni were always so welcoming. If they saw you walking around and you had Penn State, they'd invite you to their tailgate, and it was a great time. I had a blast there. I was only at the University Park for my last 2 years because I transferred there.
Okay.
But I was a Penn State student for 3 years. And it was great. It was a great experience. It's a football town.
Yeah.
Or no, what do they say? It's a college town with a football problem. You know, that's how State College built itself. And it was great. I loved it. I had a great experience. I tell people that all the time.
All right. Well, Scott, thank you very much for sitting down with us today. I really appreciate it. I've said it to anybody and everybody that will listen. The leadership that's in place at the high school, the middle school, the intermediate elementary schools, Maumee's a special place, and it's because of people like you. Thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.
That's the end of this week's Inside Maumee Athletics. I'll be back next week with another in-depth interview. I'll give you a hint who the guest is. She's one of the best athletes to ever come out of Maumee, and she recently wrapped up a hugely successful college career. We're lucky to have our supporters, the Maumee Athletic Boosters, the Mirror Newspaper, and Pride of the Panthers photographers. If you'd like to get in contact with the podcast, email us at insidemaumeeathletics@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Inside Maumee Athletics on Facebook and YouTube, and at Inside Maumee ATH on Twitter. Until next week, thanks for listening.